Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 719, interview with Philippe Cassenti about the Mohamed Al-Dura case. This program is being recorded on July 25th of the year 2010. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Philippe Cassenti, a French investigator who has shed some very important light on the Mohamed Al-Dura case. Philippe, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you. Thank you for your invitation, David.
Now, before we plunge deeper into the Mohamed Al-Dura case and then move outward, sort of keeping with our television metaphor, we'll dolly outward and take a look at other similar cases of fraudulent evidence and reporting vis-a-vis the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and then the larger landscape of French society and French anti-Semitism. Philippe, can you briefly, very briefly, sum up the Mohamed Al-Dura case and your own involvement with that and your legal struggle with Charles Indelin and France 2?
Almost 10 years ago, on September 30, 2000, the French public TV, France 2, aired a news report of 50 seconds showing a little Palestinian boy supposedly killed by the Israeli army. And intentionally, and obviously it happened. We gathered some evidence later on, and we understood that it was not true, that it was a hoax, that it was completely staged, that the people were actors. And the main problem with that is this picture became a real symbol, an icon of hatred all over the Muslim world. Bin Laden used it to incite before 9/11. Daniel Pearl was killed to avenge Mohamed Al-Dura. And all the Muslim countries had postage stamps, and this picture triggered the second intifada. So this picture has a huge impact all over the world to incite against Israel, the Jews, and the Western world. And the main problem is that it's a hoax. So I found a way to create a debate with the French public TV 4 years ago, because they didn't want to discuss with us, because they said, we're not discussing with you because we're not discussing with people like Holocaust deniers. And I eventually won a case against the French public TV when I accused them of having broadcast the hoax. I won this case 2 years ago. And after I won it, they went to the Supreme Court just in order to gain time, in order not to admit the fraud that they made. And it's a real big fight, because the French establishment is still defending the ugly message of this news report, and I'm still fighting with them to get the truth out.
A couple of your case is now awaiting a ruling by the French Supreme Court.
Yeah, but we don't even care about the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court will rule only about technicalities.
Right.
What I care is that we were able to prove it's a hoax. And even if I lose at the Supreme Court and we're going back to the appellate court, I don't even care. I mean, what is really important is that we have given substantive evidence that it's a complete stage hoax. And the main problem is that we're getting close to the 10th anniversary. It's next September 30th. We're going to have the 10th anniversary of this case, and we still don't have the acknowledgement of the fraud by the French public TV, and which is maybe more problematic. We still don't have an official statement from the Israeli government asking to the French government or to the French public TV to admit the fraud, because the Israelis are so afraid, they're so shy, that they don't want to make their point on this so important and historical case. Why I think it's so important is that the Mohamed Al-Dura hoax is the father of all the lies that we had during the last 10 years. You know, Mohamed Al-Dura is the father of Goldstone News Report. I mean, you know, all the lies that we had in Goldstone, that we had at the Lebanon War, that we had in Gaza War, that we had in Jenin, that we had during all these lies, media lies, were possible and perpetrated because the guys who were responsible for the Mohamed Al-Dura hoax were not confronted with their lies. And I'll tell you something even worse. They were honored because, for example, Nicolas Sarkozy last year gave to Charles Indelin, the guy responsible for the fraud, the Légion d'honneur, you know, Legend of Honor.
So Charles Indelin, far from being subjected to judgment because of this, was awarded a Légion d'honneur by President Sarkozy?
Yeah. So that's a disgrace.
And it's also worth noting that Jacques Chirac wrote a letter on behalf of Charles Indelet. That helped to swing the original case, and the French government overseer of the trial itself said that you should not be found guilty of defamation because you've demonstrated that what you were the statements that you were saying were true and that the case itself was fraudulent. And then following that, the sort of creme de la creme of French journalistic intellectuals en masse, using certain French terms here that have been anglicized, they jump on you and say we're castigating you as a Holocaust denier.
Yeah.
In effect.
No, that's terrible because it tells you a lot about the French situation when it comes to the Jews. Not, you have French anti-Semitism, but you have also in the people who accused me and responsible for the protection of the ugly Mohamed Al-Dura hoax, you have many Jews. So, because the Jews feel so weak in France that they feel more comfortable accusing Israel and the Jews are being extremists, are being killers, than just defending the truth. You understand what I mean? So the situation is terrible. It's really terrible on what it results on the French situation.
Let's a couple of points. We talked about some other cases, and I've also spoken about those on the broadcast before, including most recently for listeners who listen on a regular basis or who'd like to access the archives on the internet, with John Loftus. We spoke about the Goldstone Report in For the Record program number, I guess that would have been number 706, I think it was. And in any event, we've also spoken about some of the other incidents in both the Gaza War of 2009 and the Lebanon War of 2006. The evidence, Mr. Cassenti, the evidence vis-a-vis the Al-Dura case. Let's talk again briefly about the angles of the bullets. Let's review the evidence briefly and then go into some of these other incidents because, again, we've summed up your case. Briefly sum up the evidence.
Well, the evidence that the accusation is that the boy and the father got 15 bullets altogether, the boy 3 and the father 12. But the main problem for their version of the fact is that at the end, the last picture, you can see the boy and the father without a single drop of blood despite the 15 bullets that they should have received. It doesn't make sense. The other thing which is amazing is that after the boy was killed, according to them, we have the 10 following seconds of their raw material. And what we can see is that instead of having a boy completely dead, we can see the boy raising his elbow, taking a look at the cameraman, and put down his elbow, and he keeps a foot up over the floor. So it doesn't make sense. If you can't find any doctor who can tell you that a dead boy does this, well, I will apologize instead of them, but it doesn't make sense. And this is the real situation that we're facing. And that's insane. And what's insane is that you have many of the extreme leftists in Israel who are saying, for example, oh, we should forget that for the sake of peace, we should forget all these things and not fight for the truth in this case. And I completely oppose that, this way of thinking, because if you want to make peace between Israelis and the Arabs around, you'd better have the Arabs stop thinking that the Israelis are killing their children of the Arabs just for the pleasure, you know. I think you cannot make peace if you believe that your opponents are Nazi-like people, you know. And this is how they describe Israelis. And it's very important for each part of the world to make clear that this is a blood libel, this is a fake news report, and this is not acceptable.
And would point out, too, that not only were the ballistics, the angles from which the shots that were striking around the Al-Duras at variance with what can be determined to have been the case, but also the other media outlets were filming the case and showed bystanders hanging around, conversing casually and smoking cigarettes, supposedly while under live fire from the Israeli Defense Forces. And outtakes from this are available on the internet. If you do a Google search on Pallywood or use a search engine, Pallywood, PallyWood, you can view some of this for yourselves, as well as some of the other fabricated evidence that has been presented. Philippe,
and for your listeners, look, just for one thing, for your listeners who would like to follow this and see more of that, I'm going to be in the United States in October and November for lectures. For example, I'm going to be on October on October 10th and 11th, I'm going to be in Boston for the Camera Conference. And on November, I know I'm going to be in California for a lecture tour. So, I'm screening all these evidence. I'm screening all the explanations of that. So if you want, your listeners can write me an email. I'll send them the program. If I can repeat my email, it's Philippe, P-H-I-L-I-P-P-E, at Carcenty, my family name, K-A-R-S-E-N-T-Y.fr.
And we'll repeat that at the end of the broadcast. Oh, one essential detail I forgot about the discussion of the first side, Philippe, and that is that you initially approached the Israeli embassy for assistance in bringing the truth of the case out, and they rejected you. And to this point, to this day, the Israeli government refuses to get involved with attempting to promote the truth in this case.
Worse than that. It's even worse than that now. Because, for years we had some people, you have leftists there, you have people who are too close to the Arabs. And then after you had the people from Olmert and then Livni. And now we had Bibi Netanyahu. And we were expecting a lot from him because when he was not prime minister, when he was in the opposition, he was a strong supporter of the truth on this case. But since he became prime minister, he became silent. I met his guys at the prime minister office. And they didn't understand the case. They didn't understand the importance, the historical importance of it. And they better, forget this. They want to put it under the carpet. And I think it's a huge mistake because it's a historical lie which is designed to destroy and to delegitimize the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why the fight has to go on and on and on. And we need to put the pressure first on the French government to admit the fraud, but second, on the Israeli side, to force them to put pressure on the French government, because the French people will never admit the fraud unless they're forced by any external forces.
You were alluding in the beginning of this side, Philippe, to other cases which, in a sense, could be thought of as having been spawned by the Al-Dura case. Let's give an overview of those, as many as you would feel comfortable. And again, in the videos that I think it's called A Second Look.
Second draft.
There is not only outtakes on the Al-Dura case, where you can actually see the allegedly dead or mortally wounded Mohammed Al-Dura with no blood coming out, raising his head, looking at the camera, laying peacefully back down. This after supposedly being wounded by three 223-millimeter rounds. There are other cases as well, and as many of those as you would feel comfortable discussing, Philippe. What do you think of it? Are you comfortable talking about the Jenin case?
Yes, of course. The Jenin case was a so-called massacre where they claimed that the Israeli soldiers killed hundreds of people, thousands of people. And finally, they discovered that only 50 guys were killed on the Arab side. And out of these 50 guys, you had 35 military men. So, the main problem in this case is that the Israelis, instead of fighting for the truth and saying, no, it's not true, you're liars, they're just, wait, we're going to look at that. At the same time, you have the Western media who are admitting the Arab side of the story and making a huge propaganda. This is exactly what we had against with what they called the so-called humanitarian flotilla, that we had at the end of May this year. It's always the same kind of thing, They're inventing lies and lies and lies and lies, and the Western media are catching them because they're so eager to demonize Israel. And as I said, the ultimate point of the Al-Dura hoax came with the Goldstone Report. The Goldstone Report is the same kind of thing. It's a lie. It's a huge lie, an accumulation of lies. And why is it so credible for the Western media and for the and a Western audience? It's because it's sponsored by a Jew. Goldstone is a Jew, as Charles Enderlin is a Jew. So an anti-Semitic document promoted and sponsored by a Jew is much more credible than any other document.
Philippe, much of Goldstone's cachet or credibility in South Africa comes from his acceptance by the white residents, and much of that comes from the fact that when he was a judge under the apartheid era, he sentenced 28 black men to the gallows. Hence his hence his credibility and cachet among the white population of South Africa. Not an individual I've heard much of vis-a-vis Goldstone very quickly, Much of that report actually, the report might actually be called the Travers Report, because a retired Irish Army colonel named Desmond Travers actually did much of the work. And said among them that the report is a long one, and just simply by way of highlighting some of its shortcomings, it said that Hamas maybe fired two rockets at Israel, which is surreal. They fired thousands of rounds of rocket and mortar fire over a period of years, but maybe two rounds. That's like saying maybe two people committed suicide at Auschwitz. I mean, it's surreal. It's surreal.
That's terrible. But, you know, there is hope. And, you know, recently, 2 weeks ago, I had a fantastic big surprise when there were a French senator at the French Senate who interviewed, you know, on TV. It was live on TV. He interviewed the new president of the French Public TV, because Nicolas Sarkozy appointed a new president for the French Public TV. And the excellent news came with a French senator, a non-Jewish guy, without any Jewish background, nothing to do with us. And his name is Jean-Pierre Plancade. And he all of a sudden asked a question to the French president of the French Public TV and said, look, we want the truth on Aldera. You said that for you, credibility is very important, and we want you to correct the lie and to reveal the truth on this lie. So there is hope, because you have some people who are really, really intelligent and aware of the truth on this case and willing to fight. Mm-hmm. But what I find very, very discouraging, which is a big discouragement, is what I see from the Israeli side, because there is no support from the Israeli side. I mean, we're going to celebrate, if I can say, the 10th anniversary of this ugly document, which has caused so much damage against the state of Israel. And the state of Israel is still not willing to reveal the truth and accuse the French Public TV of having broadcast a fake news report. That's the main problem.
By the way, Philippe, veteran listeners to this program have heard many broadcasts that I've done over the years with an author and journalist and investigator named John Loftus. And he, too, has lamented both on and off the air about the Israeli government's, not only their complete absence of public relations skill, but it's almost as though they go out of their way to shoot themselves in the foot. And also, very quickly, I wanted to mention, the actual subject of the recent flotilla is not something I've talked about on the air. I will be in a future broadcast. I did post something, though, an article about that on my blog at spitfirelist.com. Very quickly, the IHH, the organization that organized that, doubles as to a certain extent an Islamic charity, but as a terrorist support organization. This, by the findings of the Turkish government itself in 1997, it was recently banned by the German government. And there certainly were very close connections between terrorist elements and the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist group, and the flotilla. What I wondered about, though, in my post, and forgive me for pontificating here, Philippe, but I have not brought that subject up on the airwaves, so I just wanted to clarify for the listeners. It appears to have been a very obvious trap into which the Israelis walked. That they did so in international waters appears to me to be utterly stupid. And why they could not foresee this, I commented to a friend of mine when I heard about the flotilla approaching the waters off Gaza. I said, well, here comes the next incident. You know, it was obvious what was going to happen. Why the Netanyahu government had to walk into that, you know, as though they were sleepwalking, remains a subject of great concern. But once again, the actual truth concerning what happened, you know, four of the five ships in the flotilla agreed to offload their cargo and have it shipped by land. And, you know, the crew and most of the other activists were locked below deck. So it eventually emerges that the truth was very different from what the media sensation appeared to be. And the Israeli government isn't doing a very good job at all of supporting that truth, which is certainly nothing. That's not a revelation to you, is it, Philippe Carcenti?
Well, that's terrible. That's terrible, because we need, I mean, you cannot fight for the good name of Israel and when the state of Israel is not defending itself. I mean, it's really that's the ugliest part of the fight, because you're fighting, and on the other side, you know, for example, in Paris, when I've been fighting all these years, when the people of the French establishment went to the Israeli embassy and asked them, so what Carcenti said, is it true or false. Say, no, don't listen to him. It's not interesting. It's false, you know. So it's really something which is unacceptable. And especially since we have this new government in Israel, we would expect much more. You know, we would expect some fighting resistance against these lies. And we don't see anything coming. And they don't understand what is the sense of history. They don't understand that we are at a critical time. And Israel will not be destroyed if it has to be destroyed, and God forbid, by missiles. It would be destroyed by the lies in the media, you know, by public diplomacy. They think that fighting on the ground is sufficient. No, it's not true. You need to fight after in the media and then at the United Nations. And they are not doing this. They're missing all the big picture in that.
And by the way, you alluded to some other cases, too. And in addition to Jenin, some of the alleged atrocities during the 2006 Lebanon War have also. Some of that is in the second draft and related videos. Also, I did a couple of programs back in 2006 called Middle East Matrix that discuss some of those issues. Philippe, obviously, when there is a case that is as significant as the Al-Dura case, and yet as misrepresented consistently, that can only happen when there are some very unfortunate things going on in society as a whole. We've got about 8 minutes left in the interview. What do you think, analyze for us the Al-Dura case and what it says about French society, and if you would feel comfortable, about contemporary society as a whole? And so the political ramifications of the Al-Dura case and your struggle with it in particular.
Well, the situation now, the Al-Dura case tells you a lot about how the Jews are in a very weak situation in France. And that's true that we have a lot of Muslims, but the Muslims are not the problem, because in the media, you don't have so many Muslims at the top of the media. You have many, many, many Jews, and you have many non-Jews, but not Muslims, you know. And these Jews pay their price they're paying to keep their job is to be more anti-Israel and more to demonize more Israel, and that's really disgusting. Because then, when you're trying to, you know, to fight for just for the truth, I'm not trying to fight for Israel and for the Jews or for anything, just fighting for the truth. When you have these guys against you, that's terrible. And the main problem now is in the political environment. You have exceptions that I mentioned the French Senator Plancade. But Aaron Sarkozy, who always claimed that he's a friend of Israel, and I used to meet him because, you know, I'm a French elected official, and I even ran against him 8 years ago at the parliament. So I knew him, and he's a decent man, but he's surrounded by the worst people who are advising him on the worst way, you know. The people around Nicolas Sarkozy, I would say that they're like J Street people, you know, the worst people that you can imagine on the French political arena. And that's terrible, because they're advising him very badly, and he doesn't even know that his policy is against the state of Israel, because he doesn't know the truth. You know, he's manipulated by self-hating Jews and by terrible people.
A couple of variables in the whole landscape of not only the Arab-Israeli struggle, but in terms of anti-Semitism and how that struggle resonates with anti-Semitism in various countries. One of the dynamics, and that concerns, of course, oil and fossil fuels, and the fact that the Arab and Middle Eastern, the Muslim Middle Eastern oil-producing kingdoms or countries back the Palestinian cause and castigate Israel. Do you see that as a factor in the French political and anti-Semitic landscapes?
Well, I think that the Arab money was very present in the French political arena for decades. I mean, they've been paying French politicians. We can remember what happened with Saddam Hussein, who paid almost all of the French politicians. I mean, Jacques Chirac was so close to Saddam Hussein, and after he was so close to Rafik Hariri. Just that you understand what kind of people we have and we had at the top of the French state. I mean, Jacques Chirac now, he's not anymore president for the last 3 years. You know, where does he live? Have you heard about that?
No. Where does Chirac is the former president of France who wrote
a
letter.
Former president. Just after he left the Élysée Palace, Rafik Hariri's son, you know, the Rafik Hariri is the prime minister of Lebanon who died. killed by Hezbollah and by the Syrians.
Right.
The guy, his son, gave to Jacques Chirac his apartment in Paris. I mean, so the former French president, since he left the office, he's lives in an apartment which belongs to a former head of state with whom we had a lot of problems, you know, Lebanon. So that it tells you a lot. I mean, it's open corruption. That would be unacceptable in any decent democracy. I mean, you would have all the media, all the politicians after the guys, and to understand why this guy gets so much support from this guy. But no, we don't get anything. So, you know, that's the typical French situation. And the Arab money was so present, was everywhere in the French political sphere and in the French media. I mean, Saddam Hussein was paying so much to the French journalists that he was really, really buying them. So I think it's a question of money now. And I'm telling you something. When I read some of the some American newspapers, I think that you must have also a lot of Arab money in the American media.
Oh, tremendous. Oh, absolutely. Prince Al-Waleed of Saudi Arabia is the second largest stockholder in News Corp, which I think is now the largest media corporation in the world. He's deeply involved with Disney and AOL, now separate from Time Warner. So, yes, absolutely.
You're talking about the open things which are you can see on the books. I'm talking to you about corruption. I'm talking to you about the money which is given to some of the politicians, some of the journals we had in France. And that's terrible. That tells you a lot.
And very recently, I did 6 one-hour interviews with an author named Russ Baker, who's written a book about the Bush family, and among other things, a tremendous amount of Middle Eastern oil money, Saudi in particular, that found its way into the various enterprises of the Bush family and also supporting some of their covert operations. Philippe, we've got about just over a minute. Left in the interview. If you would, first of all, tell listeners where they can contact you, and then tell us about your speaking tour in the United States later this year.
Okay, so first, my email again is Philippe, in the French way, Philippe, with one L and two P, at Carcenty, my family name, Carcenty, carcenty.fr, like France. So this is my email if you want to reach me. My speaking tour will start on October 10th in Boston with the CAMRA big conference with Alan Dershowitz and other big speakers. And then after I'm going to be in Israel, and then I'll be back in California on November 15th, and I'm going to lecture in Californian universities for at least 10 days. But if they contact me, I will put them on my friends' mailing list, and they will receive all the information regarding my next speaking appearance, because I'm going to lecture again very much in 2011. And as I will publish my book probably in 2011 too, then they will know more, and they will be informed.
So you have a book coming out?
Yeah, of
Excellent.
Course. Because I think it's a real, I mean, and we have a book, and we also have a movie, you know, they want to make a movie out of this story, because just to make people understand that even when you're fighting against the French establishment, even against the Israeli establishment, there is a way to proceed and to fight and to win.
Excellent.
We will win pretty soon.
Fantastic. We have been speaking with Philippe Carcenti, and this concludes Side 2 of For the Record Program 719, interview with Philippe Carcenti about the Mohammed Al-Dura case. This program is being recorded on July 25th of the year 2010. For Philippe Carcenti, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.